this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, mandatory vaccines, the people sponsoring them, what we don't know about their ties to the pharmaceutical industry, and what does it say about our bodies, our choices, our freedom to choose what goes into our body, whether it's a food, a beverage, a drug, or a vaccine. There are a lot of people now in government and the media saying that if you do not get vaccinated, you're an enemy of the state. In effect, for all intents and purposes, you are a domestic terrorist. They've actually used the word domestic terrorist for those who question vaccine safety and efficacy. Now, consider for a moment how many millions of Americans have had injured children after vaccines, and this has actually been demonstrated by the medical records of the child, even those parents who were successful at suing the government, the Justice Department, in the vaccine adverse reporting system, and were compensated, and which showed unequivocally there was vaccine injury. For every person that makes it into that system and is rewarded, there are 100 who don't. It's a terrible odds against the public, and yet the vaccine manufacturers are virtually indemnified. They are held harmless. Needless to say, everybody wants to get in the vaccine business. There are hundreds of vaccines in the pipeline. You can bet that the captured FDA panel will say, of course we need these. And of course, who are these people on the panel? More often than not, and frequently in the majority, they are people representing the vaccine or pharmaceutical industry or have special interest. My guest today, and I'll get more into that in just a moment, is Alex Mayer. She serves on the Children's Health Defense Board. She is an author, a researcher. She writes on science issues. But before we go to her, I just want to take a few moments and look at something that we don't look at. Why should we not believe anything that these individuals are saying? For example, why we should not trust the FDA, why we should never trust the World Health Organization, the CDC, the AAP, Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Sanofi, and Pfizer, among others. Well, first, let's hear from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Here's what he had to say, and I'll quote him. The FDA receives 45% of its annual budget from the pharmaceutical industry. The World Health Organization gets roughly 50% of its budget from private sources, including Big Pharma and its allied foundations. The CDC, frankly, is a vaccine company. It owns 56 vaccine patents and buys and very profitably distributes $4.6 billion in vaccines annually through the Vaccines for Children's program, which represents over 40% of its total budget. But adding on to that is J.B. Handley. Quote, the American Academy of Pediatrics derives a majority of its outside contributions, especially at more than $25 million a year, from pharmaceutical companies that make vaccines. The pediatricians that the American Academy of Pediatrics represents derive the majority of their annual revenues from the administration of vaccines to their pediatric patients. Also, from a collective, evolution.com, perhaps the most infamous example of corruption at the CDC is how the head of the CDC from 2002 to 2009, Dr. Julie Gerberding, left after her government job to become president of Merck's $5 billion a year vaccine division. Merck's CEO understandably described Gerberding as, quote, the ideal choice. She held that position until 2014 and currently holds the Merck job title of executive vice president and chief patent officer, strategic communications, global public policy, and population health. That is to say, the former CDC director is now in charge of Merck's propaganda efforts. One might say she's basically doing the same job that she did for the CDC, but even more lucratively. Apart from her salary, in 2015, Gerberding sold shares of Merck worth over $2.3 million. And while at the CDC, Gerberding shepherded Merck's highly controversial and highly profitable Gardasil vaccine through the regulatory maze, end quote. But there's more. again from Robert Kennedy Jr. The majority of studies that authorities paint to the contrived proof that vaccines do not cause autism have been published in a journal called Pediatrics, the official journal of the American Association of Pediatrics. As we know, the AAP is a trade union for pediatricians. All right? But then it goes further. Since vaccines are literally necessary in the minds of many, then it's understandable why they would make it mandatory. But does the science support that? The answer is unequivocally no. And this is what Robert Kennedy has to say on that issue. Since vaccines are liability-free and effectively compulsory to a captive market of 76 million children, there is meager market incentive for companies to make them safe. The public must rely upon the moral scruples of Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Sanofi, and Pfizer. But these companies have a long history of operating recklessly and dishonestly, even with the many drug products for which they can be sued for injuries. The four companies that make virtually all of the recommended vaccines are all convicted felons. Collectively, they have paid over $35 billion since 2009 for defrauding regulators, lying to and bribing government officials and physicians, falsifying science, leaving a trail of incurable chronic illnesses, injuries, and deaths from products they knew to be dangerous and still sold under the pretense of safety and efficacy. That's important. And I'll throw one more in. Wim Christensen. And this is what he says. I ate breakfast last week with the president of a network news division at CBS, and he told me that during non-election years, 70% of the advertising revenues for his news division come from pharmaceutical ads. And if you go on to TV any night and watch the network news, you'll see that they become just a vehicle for selling pharmaceuticals. He also told me that he would fire a host who brought onto his station a guest who lost him a pharmaceutical account. Robert Kennedy responded, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported. The CDC's entire vaccine propaganda campaign rests on their claim that side effects for vaccination are exceedingly rare. But according to the blatantly pro over vaccine and Big Pharma CDC, in 1 year alone, the vaccine adverse event reporting system received 59,117 vaccine adverse event reports. Among those reports were 432 vaccine-related deaths, 1,091 permanent vaccine-related disabilities, 4,132 vaccine-related hospitalizations, and 10,274 vaccine-related emergency room visits, with these numbers actually representing less than 1% of the total of this report. So you multiply these numbers by 100. Okay. And then you're starting to see that we have then literally millions of injuries and thousands of deaths. And yet nowhere do I see any of the pro-vaccine advocates taking any responsibility for this and being disingenuous about looking for the true facts. That's why you do not see open and honest debate on such an important issue. You should, but you don't. And that's why, before I introduce my guest, which I will in just a few seconds, understand the story you're not told by the mainstream media, the CDC, the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the World Health Organization, and the media that goes by their rules and regulations. No open and honest debate. No looking at all the facts. And that's where we begin our discussion today. My guest in this segment of our program is Alex Mayer. That's A-L-I-X. She serves as Robert Kennedy Jr.'s Children's Health Defense Fund as a board member and authors many, many science articles. She is president of the new California chapter for Children's Health Defense. In the 1990s, at the age of 29, Alex ran a worldwide research group at Apple until six vaccines physically disabled her and gave her brain damage. She ended up with encephalopathy, encephalitis, nausea, chronic fatigue, arthritis, digestive issues, insomnia, and more. 20-plus years later, she has recovered about 80%. She's also an award-winning blogger. Since 2005, she has published more than 900 articles, most on the topic of health and medicine. From 2008 to 2018, Alex worked part-time as a health strategist with clients suffering complex illness. In 2018, she retired from health consulting to devote her time to the vaccine movement. Alex grew up in the Oscar Mayer family. She's a graduate of Duke University and Kellogg Graduate School of Management at Northwestern University, where she has an MBA. For more information, you can visit childrenshealthdefense.org. Nice to have you with us today, Alex.
Thanks so much, Gary. It's great to be here.
When I think of the words of the Spanish philosopher George Santayana, who remarked that words are weapons, I immediately think how the vaccine proponents use words to make every effort to either cancel, ridicule, or outright defame people who, for whatever reasons, choose to oppose mandatory vaccines. Maybe they just want to wait to see what the results, for example, in the new COVID are, since there's absolutely zero science showing they're safe or effective at this moment. That will take at least 1 to 2 years. We are seeing how they now associate anyone who is hesitant about a vaccine with QAnon, or more recently, California Senator Dr. Richard Pan publicly writing that vaccine opponents are no different than domestic terrorists. This is a very dangerous precedent, having someone that powerful. He is one of the most powerful people within the California state legislature, and a medical doctor and the leading proponent for the mandatory vaccination program of children in California, to be so aggressive. I mean, just think of all the people who have had their first or second child injured because of vaccines. Do they not have a right to question them? Of course they do. But you wouldn't know that listening to Dr. Pan or those who insist there can be no questioning the safety and efficacy of vaccines. They are all safe and effective. But for those of us who are actual scientists who've studied thousands of articles written in the peer-reviewed literature on vaccines, who've interviewed thousands of parents who believed in vaccines, had the full regimen of vaccines, and then saw normal, healthy children regress into autism or some other form of vaccine damage, and then go through a torturous process of trying to get compensated to cover their expenses, then we feel that Dr. Pan, at the very least, should have taken the time to speak with those who have well-educated backgrounds in the area of immunology, molecular biology, public health. For example, I have a PhD in human nutrition and public health science. I'm a scientist, senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years, and a registered dietitian, clinical licensed nutritionist, and professor, etc. And yet, he would not debate me. Why not? If I'm wrong, let him show I'm wrong. But none of the people who are so adamantly pro-vaccine, which is fine, they can be pro-vaccine, but at the same time, don't say that you will refuse to debate people who have a hesitancy or have some well-founded, legitimate reason for not wanting to vaccinate, either all the vaccines or a specific vaccine or the amount of vaccines. So we're in a critical place right now because, in my opinion, there's uncritical thinking and a lot of virtue shaming. It's very difficult to look at someone who could have their entire career destroyed, their reputation completely annihilated by these effective counter-offensives against anyone saying anything about vaccines that would put them into jeopardy being used. So we now have draconian vaccine laws in the United States. And here in New York, Governor Cuomo has followed California's example. Other states followed then, like New Jersey and Virginia, Pennsylvania, Vermont. But now that Dr. Pan, a heroic darling in the pro-vaccine big pharma community and among the major vaccine companies, he's emerged to take the narrative to another level of censorship, denigration, and outright malice. That is my opinion. So I felt we should revisit this politicized character and offer legitimate critiques of his work. You would be that person, because when I tried to do this, and I was appearing on KPFK, one of the Pacifica stations I've been on for 45 years, I've been on WBI for 45 years, KPFK in Los Angeles for 35 years, and PFW in Washington for 36 years, and Bonnie Faulkner was going to interview me right before the vote to determine should there be mandatory vaccines without any exemptions. I had all the documentation. I even had the documentation of how much money each of the people who were voting on this had received from vaccine makers, showing a complete conflict of interest and the lack of science to support their contention these vaccines were safe and effective. And then we were censored on, of all things, irony of ironies. You could only believe this if you've read 1984, George Orwell's dystopian tome, that the free speech radio has long ago abandoned free speech. And that was Pacifica Radio. So I didn't have a chance to offer my input. May or may not have caused a difference in the outcome. But you were there. You know what's going on. You know more about Dr. Pan than probably any of the other people around. So take your time, please, and share factual information, things that are documentable and provable, that would cast a challenge to Dr. Pan being revered by the medical community, completely promoted by the pharmaceutical community, and accepted by the political community for his stance on mandatory vaccines and calling people who challenged for any reason no better than a domestic terrorist. The forum is yours.
Thank you for that introduction, Gary. Yeah, I'm the president of the chapter of Children's Health Defense in California, and we have been working with Dr. Pan, and probably against him, you would say, in California since at least 2015. He is a senator in the California legislature. And first, I just want to say before I get into detail on Senator Pan, that Children's Health Defense is not anti-vaccine. We are vaccine risk aware. We are aware of the science. We've studied the science and the law around vaccines, and we are vaccine risk aware. We consider the word anti-vaccine an epithet and very denigrating. So we also don't want vaccines wiped from the planet, which is what people assume, to make an informed choice. That's all. Everybody can always get a vaccine when they want one. They just need to be informed, as the law states. So Senator Pan hit the vaccine scene, as you will, in about 2015, when he introduced a bill called Senate Bill 277. And in California, we've always had what's called a personal belief exemption, which covers basically personal beliefs, as it says, but also religious exemptions to vaccination for people who oppose vaccines because of things like aborted fetal cells that are in vaccines. And we started to notice his behavior around that time was very unusual to get a bill passed. In particular, one of the standout moments was when the bill was being discussed in the Education Committee in the Senate, and he realized he didn't have the votes he needed for the bill to keep going through the legislature. And had that vote happened that day the way it was supposed to have happened, SB 277 would have never been passed and made into law. And what happened was that he conferred openly with two lobbyists who were right next to him. One of them is named Jody Hicks. The other one is named Janice Norman. And he asked them what he should do because he didn't have the votes to get SB 277 out of the Senate Health and Education Committee. And what they said is to call off the vote for the day. And then he did something that we've named yank and replace. And what he did is he yanked the people off that committee who were going to vote against SB 277. And he replaced them with other senators who he knew would vote for SB 277. Then he reconvened that committee and took the vote again on another day, about a week later, and it passed out of that committee. And that's what we call yank and replace. I would like to see yank and replace actually become illegal, because to use it as a political tool in that way is just unconscionable. He did not have the votes. So that was our first introduction to Senator Pan and his behavior. And we know that in 2018, he got $150,000 in lobbying money from Big Pharma. Compare that with Senator Shannon Grove. In the same year, she only got $2,000, but she is not pushing actively the vaccine bills through. She believes in parental rights, and she understands that children and adults can be injured by vaccines. So she only got $2,000 compared to his $150,000. Then Senator Pan came back on the scene again in 2019 with SB 276, another vaccine bill. And after SB 277 passed in 2015, we only had a medical exemption, and that was fine. Only about, I think, 2.3 to 2.5% of children were actually using the medical exemption for legitimate medical reasons, because they'd either been harmed by vaccinations before, or they had siblings who'd been harmed by vaccinations, or they had a family history of vaccine harm or a family history of autoimmunity or allergies, and the parents, all they wanted to do was prevent their children from having that same fate. And so that was a very small minority of children in California using the medical exemption. And then Senator Pan came back and introduced SB 276 in 2019. And this was to further narrow the medical exemption. And it unfortunately passed and was signed into law by Governor Newsom. And that basically took away, de facto took away the medical exemption, because they narrowed it down so much. They said that the medical exemption had to follow the guidelines from the CDC, the ACIP, which is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or the AAP, American Academy of Pediatric Guidelines. And those guidelines, they're not all different. It looks like a huge list of guidelines that could be used, but they all refer to each other. And they're so narrow that it's, if you don't have an allergic reaction to each and every vaccine on the schedule that they want children to have in California, you cannot get a medical exemption. Furthermore, they tried to actually criminalize doctors who are writing medical exemptions. They tried to put in the bill that under penalty of perjury, could a doctor write a medical exemption for a child. We got that removed, thank goodness. But then they came back and they said, well, they can't write more than 5 medical exemptions, otherwise they're going to be reviewed and flagged. And so that passed, that is going on right now. And even though doctors are allowed to write 5 medical exemptions per year, they are so frightened by this law that no one is writing medical exemptions anymore. So we de facto in California do not have a medical exemption anymore for children, because no one will write them. The other thing that that bill did is it established a immunization registry called CARE, California Immunization Registry, where all of the children who still have medical exemptions need to have their records uploaded. And those get reviewed by a new committee in California also, who can override the decision of a doctor who has actually seen the child. And in my opinion, I'm not a lawyer, but in my opinion, that's a violation of the law, because that is practicing medicine without examining the patient. How can a committee who's never seen the patient, never taken a patient history, decide what's best for a child above and beyond what their doctor who knows them said would be best for that child? It's just unconscionable. So a lot of families have left California because of that, and a lot of them have decided to homeschool. We're really scared that homeschooling is going to be the next target of Senator Pan. So we're just kind of biting our nails waiting for that to happen or not. The other interesting thing about Senator Pan is he's very unkind let's say, to people who are vaccine risk aware. He says that the 1% are, quote unquote, infecting the 99%. And what's so odd is that it demonstrates a lack of understanding of medical science for a medical doctor who is supposed to be a vaccine expert, because it doesn't take into account the fact that vaccines don't sanitize people of diseases, and they don't sanitize them of diseases that they're not carrying. And so there's just this odd notion that a healthy person could actually infect someone else, and it just doesn't happen. It's not true. There is no asymptomatic spread. So that's always been really odd to me, that he's relying on those very naive medical notions. The other thing he does is he's reposted tweets about people laughing at anti-vaxxers, and he's called us a public health threat and worse. And it just doesn't stop. One of his colleagues named Lorena Gonzalez actually tried to convince people during SB 276 that because so many vaccine risk aware people were descending on the Sacramento Capitol, that they would be spreading measles to the people there. Again, just a complete lack of understanding of medical science. It's a very naive notion that someone perfectly healthy could spread a disease that they don't have. It's just very odd to me. Now, Senator Pan, of course, is working in this way again around COVID. And what happened lately is Senator Pan introduced another bill having to do with vaccinations into the California legislature this year. And this is in response to the people who were picketing around vaccination sites in LA around Dodger Stadium. And there was no violence there. As far as I know, nobody blocked any entrances. And just to be really clear, Children's Health Defense does not condone blocking anyone from getting a vaccination. As I said before, Children's Health Defense is about having informed choice about vaccination. And so if someone wants to go get a vaccine, they can go get a vaccine. We don't want to block that. That is their choice. So, but we also support First Amendment rights, which are spelled out in our Constitution. And our First Amendment rights, obviously, it's the right to free speech and a right to assemble. That's the First Amendment. And that should be no different at vaccination sites. So Senator Pan introduced a bill called SB 742. And this was another bill that used the gut and replace strategy, meaning he took a housing bill that had kind of this weird milquetoast language that didn't really say anything, and he gutted it and replaced it with a bill about not protesting around vaccination sites. And he said that he wants to add it to the penal code related to crimes, and he wants to outlaw picketing, violating the First Amendment right to assembly within 300 feet of a vaccination site, 1 hour before and 1 hour after vaccination sites are open. And that will result in a penalty of $1,000 or 6 months in jail. And he said that these facts are to ensure, quote, public peace and safety. So it's just perplexing to all of us. There were two incidents at Dodger Stadium, one in January and one in February, where people gathered. And again, to my knowledge, nothing happened. No one was blocked from entering. No one was threatened in any way. Yet he feels the need to introduce this bill. Now, I looked into abortion law this morning before our call today. And if he introduces a bill like this, we at least need to have the same rights as people do around protesting abortions. And there's a law called FACE, Freedom to Access Clinic Entrances. And of course, you know, it says you can't intimidate people. And of course, it says you can't force people to not enter. You can't vandalize the site in any way, which none of the people who I know who follow Children's Health Defense would do anyway. And it's obviously illegal in California to obstruct an entrance to an abortion clinic. And California has no buffer zone law for abortion protests. Yet Senator Pan is trying to enact a double standard around protesting around vaccination centers. And it's just beyond me. Now, there was another decision in the Supreme Court in February 2003 and reaffirmed unanimously in 2006 around protesting around abortion sites. And it says that the pro-life activists could not be prosecuted. And that's backed up by RICO law, which is the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, and also under the Hobbs Act, which addresses extortion. And so the Supreme Court has affirmed the rights of people to protest abortions at the clinic as long as they're not intimidating people or blocking the entrance. Yet Senator Pan is trying to go so far as to say that people can't be within 3 feet of a vaccination clinic 1 hour before or after, and they can't picket. I mean, it's beyond me. It's a complete double standard. So that probably won't go through because it's unconstitutional, but we're very worried about it because Senator Pan has a way of pushing bills through that violate our constitutional rights.
Since the time when California mandated vaccines and removed religious exemption, has any investigation been done to see if there has been an increase in vaccine-related injuries or deaths in school children? And do you have any information and evidence for who Pan's real influencers are? Are any of his campaign funders directly tied to the vaccine regime? Have you observed anything different in the tactics being employed against vaccine opponents now that there is a frantic rush to get the population vaccinated against COVID? And are there any efforts underway to make it mandatory in California? I'm talking about the COVID now. And finally, Bobby Kennedy has now become the central punching bag for the pro-vaccine advocates. He gets pillared in the mainstream media, and yet none of these people are willing to debate him, nor are they willing to debate any vaccine opponent for reasons that should be quite obvious. Why are we such a threat to them if all we are demanding is the freedom to make one decision regarding the medical intervention in our body, the sanctity of our lives? Could you please address these issues?
I hear you. Our body, our choice, my body, my choice. And why don't we have the same rights as women who might want to get an abortion? It's just beyond me. And I think that's due, again, to this false notion that because something is called a vaccine, it prevents person-to-person transmission. And that's not actually the case. If you look at the vaccines on the current children's schedule, which is 72 doses of 16 vaccines before a child turns 18 years old, you can look at the tetanus vaccine. That's not going to prevent you from spreading tetanus to anyone. That is a vaccine to protect your own nervous system. And surprisingly, you take a look at polio vaccine. That is not a vaccine that prevents person-to-person transmission. That's most commonly mistaken to do that. And we switched a while back to the injected polio vaccine, and that's only designed to prevent the person's nervous system from being attacked by the polio virus. It's not to prevent person-to-person transmission. If you get the polio vaccine and then later come across the wild polio virus, your nervous system should be protected if the vaccine works, but you can still spread it in your saliva and feces to other people. So it's a massive misconception about person-to-person transmission and vaccines. So you asked a question about kids being injured because of the new tighter laws in California and not being able to get medical exemptions. And because the laws went into effect for this school year, but kids were not in school, kids were actually not getting the vaccines. So one really, really interesting side effect of that is if you go in the vaccine adverse events reporting system, that's the CDC's vaccine reporting system for injuries that occur after vaccination. That's a passive and very obscure reporting system. So it only captures less than 1% of all injuries, according to the CDC. But if you go in that reporting system and you look at sudden infant death syndrome, there's a huge drop in infants dying in the younger ages, like less than a year old, since COVID began, because people were going in and getting fewer vaccinations, is what we think. And we can't prove that yet, but that's what the data show right now. So that's really interesting. And again, because kids haven't had to go to school yet because of COVID since this law went into effect, we haven't seen any plaintiffs yet who were injured by vaccines because of SB 276. But we're looking and we're watching, of course. You asked about Bobby Kennedy and why no one wants to debate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And, you know, he has the science and the law on his side, and it doesn't go very well for the other side. Alan Dershowitz, a law professor, was kind enough to step up and debate Bobby Kennedy, and hands down, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. won by a landslide because Dershowitz just, he wasn't prepared as well as Bobby was. So we welcome anyone who wants to come debate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on vaccines. Please contact us. We love doing debates. Absolutely love it. And if you can produce someone who will debate him, we can set it up. We'll set it up, you know, right after this radio show, in fact. Now, let's move on to mandates in California regarding COVID-19. This is something that my team and I have been spending a lot of time on here in California, at the California chapter of Children's Health Defense. We wrote a letter to 1,100 superintendents in California and then sent it out to 19,000 other school officials last month about mandates in California. And most people don't know this, but masking, testing, and vaccines for COVID are all under emergency use authorization, and that's abbreviated as EUA. And when something is under EUA, it is illegal and unethical to mandate it. The only people or the only group allowed to distribute any of those products are the US government. And the US government is not allowed to mandate them. So we contacted all the schools in California and wanted to prevent them from instituting mandatory testing and mandatory vaccination. And to our great delight, a bunch of schools wrote back and said, oh, we don't want to go outside the law. We're not planning on doing that. And some of them wrote and said, wow, we didn't know that. Now we will not do it. There are others, unfortunately, going forward with a testing strategy right now. In particular, LA Unified School District has something called the Daily Pass that was developed with Microsoft. That's an app where children are going to have to produce a test result showing that they've tested negative for COVID before they go to school. And that's completely unethical and illegal to mandate that on them. And the schools and the school district do not have the authority to do that. Neither does the federal government. So they're getting more follow-up letters from us, as you can imagine, to let them know that they're breaking the law by doing that. And the same thing for masking. Masks, you're not allowed to say that masks work against COVID. And the same thing for vaccinations. There, we've got many, many instances of teachers and other adults who take care of children being threatened with job loss if they don't get a vaccination. And that coercion and duress is also illegal. That would be like a real mandate or could be considered a de facto mandate, depending on how bad the pressure was. And that is also illegal. So we've let all the schools know that. The thing we're doing next is we're authoring a letter based on the science and the law to all the county supervisors to let them know what the science and the law actually says as well, so they can act accordingly. Do you have any other questions around that?
No, I don't. I do have one final question, however. I've noted that different medical experts and medical journalists warning about the new COVID vaccine risks will highlight the different dangers. From your research, what do you observe as being the greatest risk we can identify so far from these vaccines? In context, we're finding this in Denmark, in Austria, in Norway, the island of Gibraltar, Finland, Sweden, and in many countries, seven countries as of today have now suspended one of the vaccines because of blood clots and because of aneurysms and other things. None of this is in the American media, and we have to ask, why won't they report on what's happening around the world? Why are they there just to defend the statements? In fact, a Dr. Wodarg and a Dr. Yeadon request a stop of all corona vaccination studies and call for co-signing a petition that it must be done and proven safe and effective before given to the public instead of what they're doing now. Now they have all these nearly 200 companies are making vaccines, not to get into the current marketplace because that's pretty much saturated, but instead they're stating that they need to get these variants, different types of changes to the coronavirus, which would mean that these people are not going to do anything unless they have the political backing to mandate these. So we could start to see, even if you've had your one or two COVID vaccines, you now have to get multiple other vaccines because, well, it changes. Well, of course, that's why they don't have a successful, and never have had a successful vaccine for any of the COVID viruses. And, you know, for example, Denmark just suspended the use of AstraZeneca's COVID vaccine, and that was just done. Why? Because a vaccine reports about blood clots, and you would think that we would know that. In fact, Denmark announced that it is to temporarily suspend the use of the coronavirus vaccine and the University of Oxford vaccine. The precaution comes after reports of severe cases of blood clots in people who had been vaccinated with the COVID-19 vaccine from AstraZeneca. And yet we are told that it's safe and effective. So clearly, if Denmark, Norway, and Iceland announce that they are today, that they will temporarily suspend the use of the coronavirus vaccine because their health authorities, unlike our FDA and CDC, which is totally corrupt and compromised, they are looking at these severe cases of blood clots. Now, that's just the cases of the blood clots. There's a lot of other cases of problems, too, and 40 people, 58 people, 13 people, and other amounts in different countries dying, especially on the tiny little island of Gibraltar. They had a huge percentage of the population who were vaccinated, mainly senior citizens, many with comorbidities, and who ended up dying. So your thoughts about what could be the worst of the worst. And then also, finally, take a look at Australia, that is now trying to pass legislation, and probably will succeed at it, that they are intentionally targeting the people who have had anything to say about the coronavirus vaccines. If you take any stand at all in Australia, if you're a healthcare worker, then you're on the attack list. And they want criminal efforts. They want to be able to de-license you if you're a physician, and or give you a prison sentence for speaking out on something that should be an open discussion, and that's happening as we speak. So
that's right.
Give us your thoughts on this, all right?
Yeah, if the vaccine risk aware crowd is so wrong about the risks, then why can't there be open debate? It just doesn't make any sense at all, because if there were open debate and we were so wrong, then we would be trounced and we would lose. But as we just said earlier, no one wants to debate us publicly. They don't want public debate because that's going to cast doubt on the vaccine program. And all they want to do is make sure that as many people as possible get this vaccine. And that's fine as long as there's a fully informed consent, which they're not allowing because they're not allowing debate. They're censoring speech on all the social media platforms. Children's Health Defense is in a lawsuit right now with Facebook for censoring us, throttling us, disabling our donate button, all sorts of things like that. Because Adam Schiff, who I think he's a senator, he sent an open letter telling Facebook to censor us. And guess what? They stepped in hot water by doing what he said, because that's the government controlling the media. And then they're no longer acting as a private company. They're actually subjected to First Amendment rights, and they have to protect free speech if the government is dictating what they censor. So we're in a lawsuit with them on that right now. You asked about the risks of the COVID vaccine. Well, I've been deeply into the vaccine adverse events reporting system, as we mentioned earlier, and we've been publishing a series of articles about that, both at the national level, childrenshealthdefense.org, and at ca.childrenshealthdefense.org. We have 8 articles now about the deaths and injuries reported to CARES, which is the acronym for Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. And because the CDC did some studies with Harvard Pilgrim showing that fewer than 1% of vaccine reactions are ever reported to VAERS, because it's a passive reporting system and the reporting bar is pretty high, it's pretty labor intensive, and also because it's kind of obscure and not very well known, we are able to estimate the actual number of injuries and deaths that have occurred after vaccination. Now, I want to say one other caveat, which we know very well, is that the injuries and deaths reported to VAERS, it's not proof that the vaccines caused them. But when you look at those injuries and deaths reported for COVID compared to other similar data sets, such as, you know, looking at how many children died or were injured after vaccines in the same period that COVID vaccines have been given, or looking at flu injuries and deaths after the flu shots were given in a similar period, you can see that this is the most injurious vaccine we have ever put on the market. And here's the numbers. You guys ready? There is a 1 to 28, 1 in 30 risk of injury being reported to VAERS. There is about a 1 in 150 or 1 in 158 risk of a serious injury reported to VAERS after every vaccine. And there is a risk of about 1 in every 550 people dying after the vaccine being reported to VAERS. Now, again, can we prove that the vaccines caused all those injuries and deaths? No, it's a passive reporting system and it's just a temporal association. But that is highly concerning. Again, when you look at the other data sets from flu shots and from children's vaccinations, we are nowhere near that reporting level of injuries and deaths, nowhere near it. It's just astronomically high. And the kinds of things that are reported, as you said, they're thrombotic events, there's heart failure events, and people just like suddenly die within their sleep or within hours of vaccination. It's just really, it's just, you know, we call it death by coincidence. It's the biggest set of deaths by coincidence you will ever see. And looking at that data, and it's just sad. I mean, you can go to CDC Wonder and look at the VAERS reports, just read them, and you decide for yourself if you think the vaccine had anything to do with it. They're heartbreaking. Now, the reports on VAERS, those are for immediate reactions, and that doesn't include what we call latent conditions that are going to appear later, and that is another really big concern. We have absolutely zero data on that in humans. We have data on it in animals. And in the animal studies, what we know is what we can expect are especially two conditions. One's called antibody-dependent enhancement, and the other one is called pathogenic priming. And both of those conditions will show up the next time someone is exposed to any coronavirus. So when you look at what's probably going to happen this fall, you know, with coronaviruses circulating again in the winter, They're ready for this. The powers that be are ready to call this COVID-21. But on autopsy, you'll be able to tell the difference. If someone died because of pathogenic priming or gets a condition called pathogenic priming, that's an autoimmune disease. That's an autoimmune disease that the COVID vaccine could have trained your body to have next time you encounter a coronavirus. The other one is antibody-dependent enhancement. And that'll happen next time you're exposed to a coronavirus, where if you don't form the correct antibodies, the vaccine could actually make your body have the opposite reaction, push the virus into your cells and cause a constant inflammatory response that we don't know when will end. So you have to be really careful, because number one is the information on injuries and deaths is being suppressed, as we know, and the CDC was just caught removing, can't remember, 500 to 1,000 deaths from the VAERS system. They don't even show up if you do the search. And there is absolutely no data in humans on pathogenic priming or antibody-dependent enhancement at all. And that's going to come later. And they are going to try to call that COVID-21, or they might call it COVID long hauler disease in the case of antibody-dependent enhancement. And just be ready for that, because on autopsy, if your loved one happens to pass away in that time, they call it COVID-21, please demand an autopsy, because a good coroner can tell the difference between dying of a virus and dying of antibody-dependent enhancement.
Alex, thank you very much for being all on with us today and sharing these very important insights. Isn't it rather ironic, and I'm not going to ask you to explain it because I think it's self-evident, that you came near death. You probably, if you were not as strong a fighter as you were and as insightful of what you could do as you have been, you wouldn't have made it. You had all these very serious, encephalitis kills people, psychopathy kills people. You know, you had these issues after you received your vaccines at the age of 29 when you're in otherwise good health. And yet today, because you choose to be cautious and exercise the cautionary principle of first before I vaccinate again, let me see the evidence that this is truly safe and effective by gold standards. Now you are being denigrated. You're being attacked. You're being challenged. They want to erase you from the internet for that experience. Yet let those people at the New York Times and other places that are so quick to engage in this cancel culture without any intellectual acumen at all, without any deep understanding of life, because most have lived in bubbles, let them understand what it's like to be you when you were given your diagnosis and when you went through that torturous process, and then say that you are not to be taken credibly because, well, you're just a vaccine denier, rather than understanding that almost all the people who are questioning the safety or efficacy of vaccines is because there is some personal experience or their homework led them to believe that they're not willing to be like the average person, just indoctrinated.
Right. So. I'm always searching for that teaching moment where I could let someone know the real risks in a way that they could absorb it before they get their own runner-up Darwin Award, which is what I call what happened to me, because I didn't have to take 6 vaccines. I just thought I needed them. And I trusted doctors. I trusted the medical system. I didn't do my homework. It was just all based on trust and, you know, these appeals to authority that people use all the time. So I'm always searching for that way to communicate that you are taking a risk. And if you were told the risk of going on an airplane ride would result in a permanent injury that would render you unable to work, unable to even process the information around you, if that risk were like 1 in 50 or 1 in 100, would you ever get on the airplane? And no one would say yes to that. And that's the risk that people are taking every time they get a vaccine. In fact, the risk is even, unfortunately, higher than that. and, you know, the chances are that they'll end up like me. Yeah, they're pretty low. But why would you want to take that risk? We know so much more now than we did when vaccines were developed. When vaccines were developed, we didn't have antibiotics. We didn't know, like, all the power of vitamin C and vitamin D and vitamin A and zinc and all that stuff. I mean, those are low-risk interventions that work better than any vaccine possibly could, and they don't take health away, and they don't risk ruining your whole life because you take them. So I just think we need to do a complete reevaluation of the alternatives here, and it's long overdue.
I would agree. Alex Mayer, working with Robert Kennedy Jr. and Mary Holland, two of the more courageous people out there, they put their lives and their reputations, their livelihoods at risk for telling the truth. And she's with the childrenshealthdefense.org for more information. They have a lot of good postings there. Thank you very much, Alex, for being with us today.
Thank you, Gary. It's been a great conversation. It's my pleasure.
Alex Mayer, AlixMayer. I'm Gary Nall. We try every day to empower people. And you empower people when you show them the truth and that there are alternatives. Just imagine if Fauci and Bill Gates and the president and the president's commissions said, let's do what we can to help save lives. Let's look at the data. The data shows you're more likely to suffer serious consequences or to die if you have comorbidities. So let's have a Marshall Plan to help an end obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, emphysema. And then let's use the knowledge of what the T cells will do in the body if you stimulate them properly. Many people, many, many people, I'm sure myself because of all the traveling I do and all the counseling I do, many people suffer not at all because they are enhancing their immune system. The body comes in contact with a virus, which we do all the time. Your body's immune system, of which is very complex, it's strengthened when you take your vitamin D, your zinc, magnesium, vitamin A, vitamin C, and herbs, elderberry concentrate, for example, and hawthorn for your heart, and echinacea and astragalus, and eat a healthy plant-based diet, exercise. Within your body makes an antibody. So now, if that virus ever shows up again, it knows it and can immediately defeat it. And that's why we are seeing a nation of so few casualties, and in young people who have strong immune systems, very, very few. In fact, of the tens of millions of young people in the United States under the age of 18, we've only had 4 die of COVID. That's ridiculously small percentage. More die of drowning in bathtubs or, you know, accidents each year. And yet we have seen an entire non-pandemic made a pandemic, non-epidemic made an epidemic, and then non-actual full cases, but rather just positive from a false test, and manipulating the fatality numbers, saying there's no flu whatsoever, not a single case of flu in England, and only 14 in Canada and almost none in the United States. That's not possible. That's not possible. They've simply shifted the numbers from one group, the flu and pneumonia, which is the big killer there, over to COVID. You can't just decrease the whole world's flu, and that's cyclic. So you see, we've been played. We've been lied to. We've been manipulated. At least this audience has an opportunity to know information that is not sanitized, standardized, and propagandized, and then weaponized for economic, political, and ideological gain. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Mother, there's too many of you crying.